If you want to hear about the opportunities that we are presenting to our investors, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club. We scour for the best opportunities and present those only to folks inside the club, and that is the only way you'll hear about our deals and what we're working on. We'd love for you to be a part. Again, go to BrickinInvestmentGroup.com and join the Brickin Investor Club.
Don't make the costly mistake of thinking that you can do everything yourself, because you can't. You don't have enough time, energy, money in the world to take down all the deals, especially if you're super ambitious.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Anthony Pinto is stationed in Japan. He has about $20 million in assets under management, a little over 300 doors, and has found a way to passively invest and actively invest with himself and other members of the military halfway around the world. Anthony, I'm excited to learn all about what you do and how you do it, and the same questions I ask everybody who comes on. Can you give us a brief overview of where you started, where you are now, and how you got there?
Yeah, absolutely, Sam. No, and I appreciate you having me come on here and talk. I would say my journey has not been the common path that people take. It's unique. So I like kind of talking about that, because it gives other guys in my same situation a proof of concept, if you will, and proof of success. And so, yeah. So my name's Anthony Pinto, active duty submarine officer stationed out here in Japan. Originally started in single family homes and small multifamily in 2018 is really when I actually started figuring out what I was doing. I had a house before that I just bought it just to buy it. But 2018 was really the time I got like really interested in learning and real estate investing. Beginning of 2019, I started into smaller multifamily, bought a quad that we house hacked for about a year before we came out here to Japan. And then bought a triplex a month after that using a joint venture with a couple other Navy guys. And then fast forward, just kind of realized, you know, that it's just as easy to do something small as it is to do something big. So, you know, we could spend all this time doing small multifamily, eventually get to, you know, some set number, or we could just go straight to the large multifamily. So that's what I ended up doing. So mid 2019, I had a property under contract in Kansas City, realized that I had no clue what I was doing, way over my head, and you know, only lost about $5,000 on that in travel costs and property inspections. But it taught me the lesson that I need to have other partners involved with this. And so started doing a lot more networking with people, you know, raising capital, and pretty much just trying to be an asset to other people. And one of the things I knew was I was going to be coming out here. So started a podcast. One of the first guys I had on was now my business partner, brought me in on a 104 unit deal in Chesapeake, Virginia, and closed on that one in March of 2020. I ended up raising about $800,000 for that one out of a $2.8 million raise. And then shortly after that, got brought into another deal in Savannah. That was 112 units, closed on that in September. And then we closed on a 92 unit in Hampton in end of October. And so that's kind of where I've been and where I am now.
Right, right. And each of those projects, you had your own, was it a different GP group every time?
So I mean, the overall composition, yes, it was the same kind of, I've had the same two or three people in each of those groups, but it wasn't the same, you know, company or structure every time.
I gotcha. That's interesting. And so you raised what'd you say? The first deal was like 3 million or something. You raised about 800,000 of that.
Yeah.
Walk us through that process. What was that like?
Sure. So, you know, one of the first things I realized with large multifamily, and really the appeal of it is that you could raise capital for it, and you could use OPM or other people's money. And, you know, that was appealing as a guy who my income was relatively limited to what my rank was. So there wasn't really a lot of opportunity to, you know, do some side jobs or anything else to build up that income to passively invest, which is really what my ultimate goal is. And so the appeal of being able to raise capital was huge. So I started digging my well, gosh, probably in March or April, and we, you know, of 2019, and we didn't close until 2020. So I had been talking to people about it, you know, getting my website up, getting smart on, you know, how multifamily in general works, what the return structure is going to be like, you know, had a sample deal package and was pitching people on it. So I, you know, I had a few people that were kind of ready, waiting in the hopper for a deal to come down the track when one did. So yeah, so that's really kind of the basis for how I was able to raise that much capital. And I really think it was providing a lot of value to individuals. You know, I had the podcast, I was putting stuff out on, you know, Facebook and on social media, really sharing my journey is really what it came down to. Cause you know, we used our VA loan to buy the quad and house hack that, and, you know, and then we were getting stationed over here. So it was a unique journey for a lot of other guys who are military that wanted to get into this, you know, this space and this sphere, and really didn't necessarily know how. So that was kind of my, how I was able to tap so many people was really providing value to a lot of people and just, you know, constantly learning and talking with people and networking.
That's interesting. Now, were these people you already knew? I mean, you said you were posting stuff online and getting, you know, providing value that way, or do you have passive investors come into that first deal you didn't previously know?
So I would say it was probably about like 80-20. A lot of the people that ended up investing with me were people I knew, either guys who I had been stationed with, you know, local military guys that I had networked with, you know, guys that I went to college with, or had some sort of military connection. And then I said the rest of the 20% were second and third order connections from those guys. So,
right. What would you say in the military? Let's talk about that for a minute, because I'm curious. Sure. What's your overall view of the financial literacy of people in, I guess, in your sphere? You know, obviously you're if you're working on subs, I don't know anything about that, so I'm already outside of my league. But you know, what's that look like, and what's your kind of overall view of that?
Sure, great question. I mean, it's something that we are, my partner and I are very passionate about, because it's something that is a huge issue in the military. Regardless of what branch you are and regardless of what rank you are, it's something that's not talked about. It's kind of that like dirty little secret where like I like to think that the military teaches you to be a soldier or an airman or a Marine, and you know, it teaches you those skills to be the best one that you can be, but it doesn't really teach you to be a person or have the skills necessary to, you know, to balance your budget and to take care of your house and, you know, to deal with your marriage and your relationships. It's just, it doesn't train us to be like that. And, you know, after a 250 year period, they're very good at doing exactly what they want to do, but not so good at, you know, teaching the life skills. And financial literacy is one of those that is, I mean, I can't tell you how many times that I've had a command financial specialist, you know, brief that we had to have yearly. And, you know, the conversation's like a 20-30 slide talk about, hey, you should have emergency fund and you should have, you know, X amount of savings saved up and you should invest in your TSP and all this stuff. And then it's like one slide about how to actually invest. And it's just like, hey, these are your options, like the capital market, real estate. And then we like move on. It's like a 5-second conversation. And it's really frustrating to me because we have so many opportunities to be able to invest in ourselves and make our money work for us, that it's frustrating to see that, you know, that is the level of nonchalance, if you will, that the, you know, the military complex is putting out to people. So to answer your question, overall, I think it's pretty low. You know, there's not a lot of guys that have $20,000, $50,000, $100,000 to throw into, you know, into a syndication. And those guys that are typically the guys who thought early about it and invested that capital or had it saved up or, you know, whatever else for this exact reason. But the vast majority of people are not. And that's why, you know, my partner and I over the 2020 did a lot of syndications and saw a lot of guys who were really interested and wanted to get in on this, but didn't have, you know, 50 grand or 100 grand to throw into a deal, or they didn't have an accredited status, you know, this arbitrary financial status that is normally reserved for, you know, the rich and powerful, if you will. So instead of doing syndications, we moved into making a fund specifically for military and veterans, and it's called Mission First Capital. And you know, we're doing this fund in a different manner than a lot of other people, in that it's a Regulation A plus fund, which means that we can have an unlimited amount of accredited, non-accredited investors. We can set the minimums at whatever we want, much lower than you're typically going to see. And, you know, and be able to market and talk to people about this, you know, outside of the traditional Regulation D, you know, framework. And so, you know, it's also, it's a lot more work to get set up. And it takes a lot more time than your typical syndication format. But, you know, we're SEC regulated. We have public and, you know, public and reporting and auditing and accounting that we have to be done, that has to be done for it. You know, there's a lot more scrutiny, if you will, but it gives us an opportunity to bring real estate opportunities to military guys, you know, regardless of their rank, regardless of their branch, be able to bring, you know, opportunities to those guys that otherwise would have been normally reserved for the, you know, the rich and powerful, the credit investors, what have you. So that's, you know, it's a problem that we want to address with Mission First Capital by giving an avenue for people to be able to invest, you know, their bonuses and, you know, their retirement funds and, you know, some spare change that they have in something other than a savings account that's going to ultimately lose them interest, or, you know, investing in an asset like a car, brand new car that the stereotypical, you know, soldier, Marine, airman will go do is, you know, get a $50,000 bonus for their deployment and then go buy a brand new car that they're going to have for, you know, a few months. So that's the option that we're trying to get with the fund. And we think it's going to be a really great opportunity for a lot of people to, you know, not only invest in themselves, but have a nest egg for the future.
Yeah. And that was going to be my question, was how you were going to, you know, combat the lack of financial literacy, you know, that you're around, if that is the case, which obviously sounds like you are, which that's really unfortunate that they give you 20 slides a year and only one of them in 5 seconds is, hey, you can also invest your money. But that is also, you know, go through the American school system and see if it does any better. And you think you'll find the answer is that it does not. So it's not surprising that it spans all branches of our government. So that's interesting. Let's dig into this fund. I'm excited to hear about this. A Reg A fund. You said that you don't have to set income requirements. Basically, anybody can invest in it. You can set how the minimum you want to have bring in. What was it like getting that set up? What did it cost you?
Sure.
Let's talk about those. And I got about 5 more questions to follow that.
Sure. Actually. So it's taken us about, and if you have an efficient SEC attorney who has done these before and you kind of hit all the milestones in a pretty quick manner, you can probably get it done in about 6 months from beginning to end. A lot of that, I would say about 2 months of that, is waiting on the SEC to actually approve you, which is obviously like outside of your control. But, you know, the paperwork is similar to, you know, a typical syndication. There's obviously, the PPM is, instead of being, you know, 50 pages, it's like 100 or so pages, sometimes more depending on how you're structuring it. So, so it takes about 6 months. In terms of cost, you know, I would say, depending on, you know, who you use to set everything up, about 150, 200,000 total to get it going. But it gives you the ability to raise, you know, up to 50 million this year and then up to 75 million once the new SEC regulations come around. So it gives you quite a bit of wiggle room to be able to raise capital that you otherwise, you know, wouldn't be able to access to. But it also, I mean, the real appeal is that you're able to bring on people that otherwise wouldn't be able to access these deals. And that's really what the draw is for us.
Right. You know, I think that's absolutely interesting. Have you guys launched this fund already?
By the time this comes out, it will be launched. Yeah.
Okay.
We're sitting here in beginning of March. We expect in the next couple of weeks or so that we'll have SEC approval and actually be able to start opening it up to capital raising.
Right. That's interesting. So we talked a little about the cost of doing it, you know, and I guess that you just have the capital, the dry powder on the sidelines to dump into that just to get that going. Okay. Yeah. That's an expensive undertaking. So you have everything in line that you say this should work out, no problem. Once you get this, what's the time period? Like, how long is that fund good for?
So another good question. Typically it's open for a year. So let's say, you know, March of 2021, we get approval for it. We have up to a year to raise the amount of money that, you know, we've listed. So typically you just put the amount that you want to raise at the max or the limit. So we have a year to raise $50 million.
Right.
But you also have the option to extend that for another year and raise an additional, you know, $50 million on top of that. So, you know, March 2021 to March 2022, we have $50 million we can raise. I think, you know, about 3 months beforehand, we'll put in, you know, in our public reporting that we get sent to the SEC, and they, you know, it's obviously public record. We'll put, hey, we're going to extend this for another year, and, you know, they can either approve or disapprove that. So, it's, you know, theoretically, you have 2 years to raise, you know, double the amount of money, so $100 million. But as of right now, it's a year to raise your full limit.
Gotcha. That's interesting. That's interesting. What's an incentive for an early investor to get into this fund?
Another good question. So what a lot of people don't realize when they're thinking funds is that, my money's going to be diluted with everyone else. Like what's the benefit of doing this? But, depending on how you structure it from a GP side of things, the tax benefits are going to be very similar. The overall benefits in terms of your cash flow and your preferred return and generally how you get your distributions back are going to be very similar. Right. Really, the only big difference, in my opinion, between a syndication and a fund of this nature is that you're going to co-mingling your funds with everyone else within the fund. Right. So you're going to do a blind pool option. So, let's say you put in $5,000 out of a $30 million fund. Obviously, that's, a much smaller amount of money than $5,000, or $50,000 in a $3 million fund or a syndication. So that's one thing to consider, is that your capital is going to be distributed among, multiple different properties. But that's also a good thing, is that your capital is going to be distributed among multiple different properties. So, let's say a syndication, you're buying one property typically, and, you're betting that this property will do, X amount based on the pro forma and based off of the experience of the operators, right? But if that goes wrong, now your $50,000 investment is now at risk. You may have capital calls, you may not get that money back at all, right? Versus if something happens like that, when you have, 8 or 10 different properties that your money is now distributed across, right? Your risk is obviously, dissipated across that. And it's a similar thought to single family mindset in terms of vacancy versus multifamily, right? A single family home, you have one vacancy, that's 100% vacancy, versus a single unit vacant in 100 unit property, you now only have 1% vacancy, right? So that's kind of the thought process there. So in terms of early access, you're going to get right into the best properties that we're going to have right off the bat. You'll get the preferred return starting and accruing right away, my thought process is it's not when you time the market, it's how long your time is in the market, the old Warren Buffett saying. So, the more time that you can have your money working for you, the better overall it's going to be for you, right? Versus trying to time it at a particular time, in my opinion.
Right. Will this fund be the sole investor in the next projects you're taking down? Or what if there's not enough money in this fund to be the equity portion of the raise or equity portion of the deal? Can other investors still invest with you, or are there regulations that prevent that from happening?
So are you saying if we're raising $50 million and within 8 months, are we capping at that? Or are you saying
No, let's assume that, you get approval here in a couple of weeks and you all of a sudden have a deal come across your desk and they say, all right, we need $10 million in equity. It's a $40 million acquisition, you need $10 million in equity right now. But you've only raised $2.5 million in your fund. So what would typically happen would be that you would bring on some other, other GPs, some other sponsors in the deal that would, they'd bring their own portion of the raise to the table, much like you did on your first project where you brought $800,000 to the table.
Right.
Can the fund have other partners in the deal or not? I don't know.
I see what you're saying. Yeah. So we have three main methods of which we're looking to deploy capital, I guess. The first one is going to be with us locally. So, my partner and I together have over 400 units, mainly in the Hampton Roads area, right? So my partner has been, doing multifamily for quite a few many years now at this point. And so, he is a expert, I guess, in the realm in the Hampton Roads, Virginia area, which is where a couple of our properties are. So that's the first instance of how we're planning to deploy it, is locally with us, the two of us managing that as a general partners, as we've done in the past. The second method is to work with other military veteran operators around the country, which, we know quite a few that are set up either as active duty or actual military veterans who are retired. Set up around the country who are doing exactly what we're trying to do in terms of syndications. So we're looking to partner up with guys like that who, we already have a relationship. We have a baseline, military understanding of where everyone sits in terms of our principles and our vision. And we'll partner up with guys like that to, supply capital on the LP side of that, whether that's full amount or a partial amount of that to work with those guys. And then the third way we're planning on doing that is, probably about a year or so from now, we're going to have we're going to use a program called SkillBridge within the military, which gives active duty guys an opportunity in the last 6 months of their time to be able to do an internship at a company that they want to work for and then get out after that. So we're looking to bring on active duty guys to come learning, you know, the ins and outs of multifamily investing, and then deploy them around the country to set up their own teams and essentially be the mother fund, if you will, right? So we're employing, you know, military guys, veterans who are, you know, want a piece of real estate and we want a piece of real estate investing to be able to essentially go out and make their own fortunes. And, you know, really the sky is the limit for those guys. So that's how we're looking to deploy the capital. So in terms of, you know, partnering up with other people, yeah, that is an option in this case.
Right, right. Yeah, that's interesting. I was just curious to know if there's any restrictions that surround that. So that's really fascinating. How will you market outside of maybe just talking, you know, shaking hands with friends and family and military, other people in the military? Like, how will you market this fund? Is this something you can just blast across the internet? Is it something you can talk about all the time? Is that one of the benefits of a Reg A fund?
It is. So just like a 506C, you can publicly solicit and put it out wherever. You can do the same thing with the Reg A Plus fund in this case, right? I mean, there's really no limitations really in terms of the marketing after you get SEC approval, right? So we have the ability to do a test the waters kind of marketing phase to see if there's a interest in it, right? But it's the same level of marketing that we can do with the 506C, right? We can put it on Facebook. We can put it on a website. We can, you know, put ads in a paper for it, right? So it gives us a lot more flexibility to be able to reach people that we otherwise wouldn't be able to if we were doing like a 506B. So to answer your question, we're going to do social media marketing. We're working with broker dealers to find individuals, you know, going to conferences, military related conferences, you know, putting up webinars, you know, and really talking with friends and family and getting the marketing out that way. It does present a unique marketing challenge because we're trying to tap people that normally would not see these opportunities or be, you know, within the CRM, if you will, like a broker dealer, because it's just not the type of clientele they typically would have. So it does present some unique challenges, but I'm super excited to start talking to people and getting the word out about it.
Right, right. And there's plenty of people who've gone, you know, before you in this space that have raised plenty of capital. But I think you're right. There's the people that can only write a $1,000 to $5,000 check. You know, they don't typically spend time vetting multifamily acquisition opportunities. Because right. these opportunities typically just, you know, for a syndication, it doesn't make any sense to bring someone with that small of a check on. Just the administrative burden is too high.
Right.
So that's really interesting. I'll be fascinated to watch as you grow and see what you guys put inside of it. So that'll be a lot of fun to see. Let's jump here into the final four, Anthony, if we can. The first question is, what is one piece of advice you would give to an aspiring investor?
I would say is that, you know, multifamily is a team sport and you need to build your team sooner rather than later. Don't make the costly mistake of thinking that you can do everything yourself because you can't. You don't have enough time, energy, money in the world to take down all the deals, especially if you're super ambitious, to take down all the deals that you want in life. So you need to have team members on board, whether that is other general partners, whether that's, you know, limited partners you're raising capital from. You're obviously your professional team and property managers, lenders, all that. But regardless, you need to have a team built out and you should do it sooner rather than later.
Right. No, that's a great point. That's a great point. What is one thing you are doing to stay on top of your game?
I mean, I think this game and really in life in general is about constantly learning. So constantly reading new books, constantly challenging your own assumptions, understanding what's going on within the market, both from, you know, a what are people telling me and what are people not telling me standpoint. And yeah, just constantly learning and evolving and your understanding of what's going on with the world, whether that's a business or in life.
Right. No, that's great. When it comes to giving back, what is one way you are making the world a better place?
Yeah. So I think this is the big thing with the fund is this is a opportunity for us to provide and give back to you guys who, you know, sacrifice sometimes their lives to, you know, defend our country. And I think that is worth something. And it is a market that a lot of people are really itching for. And not only that, but we're going to have a nonprofit arm of this to cover exactly what you're talking about with financial literacy within the military. So actually being able to teach guys personal finance, how to actually invest, what is real estate investing, and how can you get involved with it? So So that's a big component of what we're trying to do here with the fund is being able to make sure that, you know, yes, have opportunity for people to invest, but also being able to educate people on how to invest.
Right. No, that's great. That's great. That's super cool. I love all those things. Anthony, if our listeners want to get in touch with you, how do they do that?
Sure. So you can find me on social media. I'm pretty active on Facebook. Found that that's a really great way to find a lot of contacts with people. You can also find me on LinkedIn, not as regular there, but you also can just go to missionfirstcapital.co and check us out there. You can also email me at anthony@missionfirstcapital.co.
Anthony, thanks for your time, man. This was great.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, Sam.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much and hope to catch you on the next episode.